You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and I get kind of lonely around here being the only David, which is why today's guest I have selected is also named David. He's joining me from, let me use a little insider nomenclature here, the GTA, that's the Greater Toronto Area, for those of you who are not in the know. It's David Gilbert, who is a voiceover artist and I was going to say raconteur, but then I had to think to myself, I don't know actually what a raconteur is. So you may or may not be David, and if you can tell me what that means, more power to you. But David Gilbert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What the heck is a raconteur?
You had it mostly right, GTA, but it's not Toronto, it's Toronto.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
It's like the movie The Man from Toronto. You could tell that they weren't from Toronto because they said Toronto and not Toronto.
Well, so is it Torontonian or Torononian? I don't
Torontonian. Yeah. It's funny, it's Torontonian, but not Torononian. That would be weird.
It would be. And I don't know why we're even talking about this. This is kind of weird. However, what's not weird is something that I found fascinating when I first met you. And it's, I think, been over a year now that you and I have known each other. You first showed up in my world attending the book club that my partner and I host for marketing professionals. And one of the things I absolutely loved as soon as I saw it, and you used to use this as your Zoom background as well, was one of your websites, which is Easy 24-Hour Voiceover. And if that is not a positioning statement, a unique selling proposition, I don't know what is. So I'm curious, what's the history there? How did that come about?
Sure. So my regular site, the main site, is davidgilbertvoiceover.com. And that was something I needed to have very simple, tried to keep it, you know, the name and what I do in one URL. And over the years, I started in 2016. This is one of those industries, and there's many like this, where there's thousands of people, tens of thousands doing the same thing. The barrier to entry is quite low. So it's like a real estate agent. There's 50,000 in Toronto or 70,000 in Toronto. How do you break out? How do you be different? And easy 24-hour thing came about through a combination of two factors. One was a chapter of a book that I've read many times. It's This I Know by Terry O'Reilly, mm-hmm. Brilliant ad guy. And then a local Toronto marketer, Mark Evans, about really understanding who you are, what you do, and not in terms of your own purpose, like recording MP3 files, is what you do, how you affect your customer. So me being relatively new to the industry back when I started, I thought, well, how can I differentiate myself? How can I put a flagpole in the sand and say, I'm going to take this little section. Every other voice actor worth their salt can turn around projects in 24 hours or less, but nobody positioned themselves that way. Nobody registered the URL and created marketing around that. So I thought, well, how do I become different? Well, I'll plant a flag in the sand and say, okay, 24 hours, make it easy. Off you go. So I created goes to a landing page. I created a video, the whole deal. Like it was an interesting, interesting program that I started. So,
yeah. Now you made a point of saying other people in your industry do the very same thing. They just don't talk about it. And you decided, well, I'm going to talk about it. For regular listeners of this podcast, you may have heard this story before, and David, I assume you have because I tell this story a lot, but this is the same concept as the Schlitz beer concept, where they claimed the positioning around the fact that, you know, there's a hygienic way of processing and brewing the beer, the multiple, you know, times that they wash bottles and everything else, standard practice in the industry. It's just nobody else was talking about it, and they you know, took advantage of this opportunity, or rather the ad man who noticed this took advantage of the opportunity to highlight it and position them in a way in the public's mind that nobody else had claimed.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing, I think, was Goodyear or Michelin. It's on the Terry O'Reilly's book, where, you know, every tire you buy is comprised of vulcanized rubber and steel, right? Just different treads and other, you know, minor features. So way back when, I think it was Michelin, said, well, we're going to become the safety brand. So all their positioning was safety. They weren't any more safe than the rest of the tires. But if you were, you know, in the 80s, 90s, buying a minivan and you had to replace your tires, well, mom was, oh, got to be Michelin. Like, there was no question. And so you're creating that brand persona out of a part of what you are, what you do, that doesn't have to be necessarily unique, but you've sort of positioned yourself as that is the brand.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating. I mean, we know that the best brand marketers out there, like Nike and Apple, when you have people sleeping outside your stores for 12 hours to buy your product, you've got good brand positioning. So,
and I, you know, to a certain extent, we try very hard to advise most businesses not to get caught up in the brand piece of what you just said, but yeah, the positioning piece of it, I think is slightly different, right? Those sure. guys are trying to capture a place in the mind of every consumer around a range of things, mm-hmm. right? But it's very possible that an attorney or a financial advisor or a dry cleaner in a local area, right, can claim positioning.
Absolutely.
And doesn't necessarily have to have the sort of brand recognition that the guys you just mentioned have.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. If you're a real estate agent, you focused on, in my case, Thornhill, right? You knew every street, you knew that area. Then, of course, that would be your positioning. I'm the Thornhill realtor, because you know if anybody wants to buy or sell in that market, in that specific geographic market, you're the expert. You know, if somebody wants to buy in, you know, Oshawa, another city, they'll go and find another agent. So specialization, as long as you have a big enough marketplace, then yeah, absolutely. Positioning, it's almost like what I say to many people about having that Emerald City, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have that Emerald City, where are you trying to go to, whether it's your business or your own personal life? You're never going to find that Yellow Brick Road. You're never going to be able to reverse engineer that Yellow Brick Road. So if you can figure out what that Emerald City is, how can you differentiate yourself from all these other people? If you're the only person in your trade market that does that particular thing, great. That's not realistic.
Yeah.
But if you can find a way to leverage your unique qualities, that people will buy from you because of what you do or who you are or what special sauce you have, right?
All right. I want to shift gears a little bit, because we've been talking about some really interesting generalist marketing concepts, and I know we're going to get back to some of them, but I want to talk a little bit about the work that you do and how it fits into the marketing world. Now, before you got into voiceover work, you actually were in sales and marketing professionally in other respects. These days, you're doing things like narration of content for folks who hire you, whether it's video or audio content. You're doing commercials, voiceovers. And here's the one that I like the best. You're doing IVR or the phone system. And yep. So folks, if you've ever, you know, called up, I don't know, Cracker Barrel and been put on hold, it's very possible you heard David not just telling you that somebody would be with you shortly, but likely also promoting something that Cracker Barrel wanted you to consider buying from them. And so I want to enter into the conversation about the work that you do in this respect, right? There's lots of different channels in which marketing occurs, and you happen to spend a lot of time in a lot of those lesser known, and to a certain extent, more known channels as well.
Sure. You know, my tagline on my website is "The voice of your business is my business," and that's broadly from voice, and voice being your messaging. But if you think about how many different touch points you have with a company, from their phones, their websites, their YouTube channels, their social media, their brick and mortar look, I mean, there's so many different places where you can have a connection with the company. And having that cohesiveness of your branding, your messaging, and unfortunately, the audio aspect, your audio brand, for lack of a better word, you know, the Green Giant or NBC, ding ding ding, like those sounds, that's all tied into their brand. The Amazon Prime opening and the Netflix, dun dun. When you call up a company, if the message on the system is completely off from the brand of who you are, right? Because you've got some, you know, the local store person or the medical office receptionist just record something, and it doesn't align with the company. You know, this is a perfect example of Disneyfication of it. Like, every little touch point is so important, because that's the first time you're going to hear something from the company. And if it's not, doesn't match with the brand, you're not going to connect. I mean, what I do is I help you connect the words to the audience. So if you don't connect to the audience, your marketing dollars are done, whether it's digital, print, TV, radio, telephones. Same thing.
I want to go back to this word that you just used, Disneyfication. I used to work in the theater industry, and back in the 1990s and early 2000s in Times Square in New York, we were complaining about the Disneyfication of Times Square, which was very much about heavy retail and exit through the gift shop and all of that sort of thing. But you meant it in a very different light, and I wonder if you could explain in a little bit more detail what you mean by Disneyfication. I think it was more about consistency.
It's more, to me, it's more about the little things. You know, it's very easy to get caught up in the big things, and that's important because that determines your strategy. But it's all those little execution things. You know, like I remember hearing stories of, you know, Disney would steam clean the grounds every night, so that when people came in the next day, whether it was somebody who's been there 14 times or the first time, they want the customer to think that they're the first people to walk along that street. Right. And if
they repaint the fence at the front of the theme parks, right? The front gates every single night. So another one that I you know it happens very consistently are things that happen in the gift shops, little minor details about the way that they engage with different visitors, guests, I guess they call them, different ages. Right. Sure. And so I'll let you continue. But yes, it's all over their business.
Like, can you imagine walking into the first gift shop in Disney World, Disneyland, whatever, and you see an empty rack? Like, that would never happen. It happens all the time in regular retail. But for them, they want you to come in and see the store just opened for you. Right. And taking that mentality to your own business, and thinking of every time I interact with a customer, whenever they walk into perfect example, bathrooms and restaurants, right? If you go into a bathroom at a restaurant, 99% of the time, it's disgusting because it's like an afterthought. But that's part of your experience of being at that restaurant. So it's all the little things that add up. You think, oh, whatever, it's too much money to fix the fading awning of my shop. Well, that faded awning tells your potential customers that you are not serious about your business, or you don't really care about if you don't care about the little things, how am I going to expect you to care about the big things, right? So that's what I mean by Disneyfication, is the attention to detail as it relates to the customer is, like, I'm sure I'm guilty of missing some things myself, because I'm human, but it's the fact of, okay, every time you have something that interacts with a customer, user experience, like your website should be easy. You shouldn't make it hard to return things. You should have the policies, procedures, everything should be really geared to the customer. Because if you do, you'll build loyalty, like extreme loyalty.
So let's bring this idea back to the work that you're doing with clients. All right, there's obviously plenty of one-off. Hey, David, I just need you to record something for me. You know, where this may not come up, but I imagine that there are other projects where the consistency of voice and the the type of audience that you're putting me in front of, and how do I need to sound and come across to represent your brand most effectively.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how you approach that and what you get in return, I guess, from the clients is sort of interesting too, because there may be something instructive for a client who's, you know, listening or a potential client who's listening out there thinking, I don't know how to address these types of questions. So
sure.
David, teach us.
It's probably a little easier to break it down in terms of, I break my customers down into two large categories. The educated buyer and an uneducated buyer. And it's nothing to do with intelligence or education. An educated buyer is somebody who, in my mind, who knows what they're looking for. They know what quality costs. They know, like, they understand it. And these are advertising agencies, production companies, people who hire on a regular basis. They know what they're looking for. The uneducated ones could be like somebody like you. You would like to sit around the table discussing with your partners, go, well, we need to like do a video on this, or we should update our phone system. And you don't know where to go. You don't know what quality costs. You don't know how much it should cost, whatever. And so there's an education aspect there. So I don't look at it so much as each individual job. And I obviously understand from the client what they're looking to do, who they're reaching. I'll ask these questions, who's your target market and all that kind of stuff. So I understand how I'm going to affect the read. What to me is the bigger thing is satisfying their problem. And it took me until a couple of years ago to understand what problem I solve. And that's, you know, connecting your words to your client, because it's not just like bringing words to life. It's to actually connect. And I look at it more of how can I help you, even if I'm not the right voice. And I have helped companies, some I have never even sold to, but I've helped them cast for roles because I happen to connect with them. They want the customer, their end of client said, oh, we want a female, we want French, we want whatever. I'm like, okay, I leverage my network. So it's about building that trust in their mind so that, thank you so much, we really appreciate it. Next time we have something, you're top of our list. Like I helped them. Sucks for me because I didn't get the job, but I'm not thinking about it in terms of a job. I'm thinking about it in terms of clients, because, you know, projects, jobs are transactional, clients are relational. So finding a way to help them make things easier, whether it's getting the audio back in 24 hours or less, or helping them grammatical issues, or giving them something to think about in terms of, well, have you thought about doing it this way? It's more consultative as opposed to transactional. So I don't know if that answers the question.
No, I think it does help in a great sense, because, you know, for many service providers who are hired for either, you know, their skill or their talent, right? Those are not considerations that most of them have. They're looking at, okay, how do I deal with my piece of this? I'm going to get in, I'm going to get out, I'm going to do the best job I can. And there's more universal consideration when you're approaching this. And I think that's important for anybody who's considering hiring, you know, an outside service provider, regardless of whether it's voiceover or any other service, to make sure that they understand and appreciate the context of the work that they're playing a role in.
Sure. And also understanding the context of the buyer. Are they a one-man shop? Then they're just outsourcing this function. Or are they one person in a large corporation? You know, especially for people who are just starting out freelancing in any field, they don't have that sort of business background to think, oh, I have to now have that personal connection with my buyer, but I'm also a vendor. I'm a vendor to this other company. There's purchase orders and invoicing, all the functional aspects that I think people forget about. And if you're thinking beyond the transaction, that's when you'll get to the point where you're actually going to see some traction with that customer, because now you're not just there to hey, well, you know, give me the money. I want to do the job and get on to the next thing. You know, that's a very short-sighted, you know, view of things. So
let's get into a little bit of the sort of the nitty-gritty of the work that you do and where the opportunities exist for businesses to utilize voice talent.
Sure.
And so I sort of outlined the three areas that you mention or you highlight sort of at a high level on your website, yeah. Which are, you know, commercial work, the narration, and the phone systems. But let's dig a little deeper.
Sure. So I sort of break it down into the external, and the internal for the most part. So externally, what would a business, and most businesses have employees and customers and whatnot. So there's external content that goes out to the world. So that would be commercials, YouTube videos, explainer videos, anything kind of like that. Then you have internal stuff, which is like e-learning, corporate videos, training, telephone system messaging, for instance. And I look at it from a holistic standpoint, right? So if it's external, internal, whatever, employees, customers, sorry, what was the question again?
But just sort of digging down into the areas and also understanding opportunities that businesses could be or ought to be taking advantage of to utilize, talents of a voice artist that they may not be.
Sure. So let's break it down by genre. So let's say, you know, starting commercials. Well, chances are you're going to have a production company do that for you or an ad agency. So that all gets cast through those companies. You don't really have, you get final approval. You could say, I'd like to have a female or a male or whatnot. Corporate videos. I'm not going to say that everything has to have a voiceover. That's just, you know, wrong and accurate to think. You know, if you have a very charismatic leader in your company and you're doing a corporate video and it's a interview base, right? You want that person to be the face of the brand. It doesn't make any sense to have that person come on and talk for 2 seconds and then have a voiceover in the back. It just doesn't make sense. But there's a lot of content that goes out there that could have a voice and would benefit from it because you're and not just an AI voice, because AI voice is as good as they're getting. They lack soul. They lack that sort of humanistic part of it. Having that human voice talk to you, it's a very powerful thing. I mean, that's why most commercials have a voiceover. They have somebody talking to you, a human talking to a human. E-learning, same thing. I mean, there's some projects in corporate training or e-learning that you don't need voiceovers, but it does help that connection. Telephone systems. I just called somebody the other day and it was an automated voice. And it was just like, I'm tuned to it, but it was annoying. Or it's very, you know, there's a lot of background noise or echo because they were recording it in the office. So having a voice for a project can build that connection, which is really what you want. You want to build connection with your audience, whether it's your employees or customers or leads or whatnot. So,
yeah. I want to get back to something that we were talking about a little bit earlier, because I'm listening to you as you're speaking. And, you know, I mentioned you're in Canada. You have a pronunciation that is distinct enough that I can pick up on the Canadian pronunciation of certain words that you're saying. And I'm going to assume that there are regional clients who don't really care and regional clients who would really like to make sure that you don't come across as, you know, a Canadian for their Southwest regional company or sure. You know, wherever they may be located.
Sure.
How does that stuff come up and how do you address it?
So interestingly, most of my clients are American and I'm just talking to you in just a casual conversation voice. When I have a project, I know it's going to the US, I will be more cognizant of it. My about, it's not as pronounced. It's about, you know, the differences are subtle in terms of ow. There's a, like a bow versus a bow, right?
Mm-hmm.
but I don't get it too often, thankfully. I don't get those, hey, you sound like you're from northern Wisconsin. Yeah. Can you tone? No. So I strive to have that neutral English, because that tends to work. Doesn't matter where you are. What I also don't do is I don't do setup accents. Mm-hmm. So if somebody were to ask me for a South Texas drawl, I don't do it. If I tried it, it would sound weird. Yeah. So I don't try to do things unless it's like a character thing, in which case that's fine because it's known that this sort of almost a caricature. But I tend to avoid anything that has a specific, you know, we want a Tennessee Southern, you know, no, I don't. Yeah.
When you say neutral, I'm thinking back to the early days of Hollywood where they had all of the actors use a completely made up dialect, which they called, I think they called it Mid-Atlantic.
It is an actual accent.
Okay.
Which is a combination of New England and RP, which is standard British, right? So it's sort of like a posh, like if you think of Thurston Howell.
Yes.
You know, Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, like that kind of era. It's very, very proper, very like, it's almost like a British accent, but without the British, you know. And nobody talks like that anymore. Nobody talks like the radio commercials or radio or TV commercials of the 40s or 50s, where they're talking like this, like, yes. Because people don't want to, part of it is because people don't want to be sold to, and partly because the technology of that time, the radios, you know, those big honking radios, mm-hmm. The quality wasn't there. So the announcers had to really project everything, you know, coming up live, like everything was all very pushed. So all that's gone. In fact, and it's a pendulum thing. So right now you have this hyper conversational reads and commercials. Some of them sound like they're just like lying in cups going, yeah, I want to buy this new Subaru, like whatever. Like it sounds very so laid back. And mm-hmm. Even I've heard cases of producers bringing somebody off the street into the studio. Okay, record and then use that. That was mm-hmm. the one that made it to the air. But every case is different, every situation, every brand, every use case, you know, even e-learning. If you're training somebody, are they sitting next to you? Are you a colleague? Are you a boss? Is this something that's going to go to everybody or just C-suite or just the customer service reps? There's so many different factors that go into it. So whenever people, oh, you're just reading off a page. Okay, so why did I spend thousands of dollars on training and call the special equipment? And like, it's not that easy. You know, when I first started, I was talking like this because I thought that's how you're supposed to say things. And no, you know.
So I do want to get to that starting point in this world because I've, you know, seen your website. I've listened to a bunch of the work that you display there. But I also know that you didn't start in this industry. Nope. And you spent a number of years in sales and marketing in a very different world. And so I'm curious to hear what was behind this transition.
Well, do you have do you want the long story or short story?
In the remaining couple of minutes we have.
Okay. Let me find a way to shorten it. So I was a rambunctious kid and I used to make some strange sounds with my voice. But I never did anything with it. Fast forward to university, I had a professor say, oh, you got a good baritone voice. Have you considered, you know, going to radio? I'm like 19 years old. What the hell do I know? And this is pre-internet too. Ended up moving to London, Ontario for a job, found a studio. Don't know why. Went in, talked to the guy. What's this voiceover thing? And he says, well, you mostly do corporate videos here. And we bring a gentleman in who went to Juilliard. I'm thinking, okay, thanks. Goodbye. Because I hadn't even done a high school play by that point. So I went on with my life into sales and marketing and pretty much bought or sold everything in your house. Excuse me. And 2016, January 2016, I was downsized from the company, started looking for jobs, not really looking forward to it because I didn't really like the whole. Anyways, best friend said, hey, what about that radio thing? And I'm like, I don't know. So I Googled voiceover and whoa, like everything's different. Back when I looked at it, it was all union talent. It was in a studio. It was expensive, blah, blah. Now there's all this non-union work and there's different genres and you can do it for your home studio. I thought, okay, well, since I'll probably have to work till I'm really old and gray, why not do something that if I can talk, I can make money? So I jumped in both feet, found a local voiceover group, went to the whole Second City improv program, took acting lessons, and you know, invested a lot in training and coaching, went to conferences, and ironically, and here's what I think is the most interesting thing for me, is I've learned more about myself and about business and marketing in the last 7 years than I had the previous 24, because I was always that feather in Forrest Gump floating around in the wind, but now I had some more purpose. And I've seen Gary Vaynerchuk and I've seen Simon Sinek. I've seen all these guys talk at conferences and reading more books. I've been more engaged in my career. So that's why sometimes I'll have these career consultations with people. I have nothing. If you go to my LinkedIn profile, there's nothing in there that talks about that. There's nothing that talks about my passion for user experience for, you know, other products or services. Like, all that's just from organic knowledge growth. And I think having something that can get you more excited about your career path, or something that will keep that motivation up, has far, far greater reaching effects than just the actual thing. So started 2016 and plowing through it ever since. So
I love it. Earlier, I accused you of being a raconteur. For those who didn't take the opportunity to look it up, I did. It's a person who tells anecdotes in a skillful and amusing way. So I wasn't far off, was I?
No. I'm sure there's a pun in there, raconteur, but I didn't know it or whatever.
in any event, I will say that as I've been listening to you, I hear hints of another alumnus of Second City, and that of course is your neighbor in Hamilton, Eugene Levy. And so if you ever are looking for a great Eugene Levy impersonator, please look up David Gilbert.
I sound like Eugene Levy. That's a good, that's a new one. Thank you.
David, before we wrap things up, why don't we make sure that folks know a little bit more about how they can find you if they're interested in learning about your services?
Sure. Easiest thing to do is go to davidgilbertvoiceover.com. I tried to make it as difficult to remember as possible. And you can listen to my demos, watch some work, you can read some reviews, and my contact info and 14,000 contact me forms are on there. So, of course, I'm all over social and LinkedIn and all that fun stuff, but you know, David Gilbert voiceover is the easiest thing to get me. So.
Perfect. Well, we will make sure to have that link in the show notes, and I'll include a couple of your social media links in the show notes as well, just for fun. Hey, David Gilbert, thank you so much for hanging out and
for, my pleasure.
Sharing so many wonderful anecdotes skillfully and amusingly.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Folks, this has been another episode of More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to this episode, and I'm pretty sure you do, please send them our way. In the meantime, we'll catch you on the next episode. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.